From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Eastern Kentucky University Center for the Arts in Richmond, Kentucky, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Colonel. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. It is great to be here in Kentucky in the center of horse country, especially because out of all the theaters we've played over the years, this is the only one that had valet parking for thoroughbreds. It was really... It's cool. Don't you hate it when you get your horse back and they've changed the radio on the horse? So we have got Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron joining us later to explain the finer points of the sport of kings. That'll be great. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there. I'm Joe Schaefer from Decatur, Alabama.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. How are things in Decatur?
Fantastic.
Now, I don't know where Decatur is. Could you tell me?
About 20 miles west of Huntsville.
West of Huntsville. Okay. A vague sense of where Huntsville is here. All right. What do you do there?
I'm Internet Marketing Director for Lynn Layton Cadillac Nissan.
Oh, so you're selling cars to people online?
Yes.
Is that fun?
Oh, it is. Well, it's very interesting. It's a great job.
Do you have to be the kind of shady character that car salesmen have to be when you're doing it online?
No, not at all. My main focus is to take a million pictures of the car so people know exactly what they're getting when they come down here.
That seems strangely honest.
We do it a little different here.
All right. Well, good for you. Well, welcome to the show, Joe. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, alum of both the Colbert Report and the Second City in Chicago, Mr. Peter Gross is here.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Peter.
Also, it's the interim editor of the San Antonio Express News, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Kiri.
She edits the interims. And lastly, the man behind Esquire magazine's politics blog, and he's a contributing writer to Grantland.com, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Joe.
So we're all gathered. Let's get started. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations in the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain it. Do that two times out of three. You win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
It's clear the country's talking to itself, and it's clear that across the country, people are saying, you know, I think we need Newt Gingrich.
That was somebody offering a daring bit of political analysis. Who believes that the country really needs Newt Gingrich?
I think there's only one person, and that would be Newt Gingrich.
It would be! I think you should get 2 points, because you're right. There's one person who thinks that, and it is Newt Gingrich. Instead of Mitt Romney, a guy who really, really, really wants to be president, the GOP at last is turning to a guy who thinks he's too good to be president. Gingrich once described himself as, quote, an advocate of civilization, definer of civilization, teacher of the rules of civilization, and leader, possibly, of the civilizing forces, unquote. He's not a politician. He's Gandhi with a weight problem.
I was about to say that's Charlton Heston's whole career.
Right there. Running through the movie then.
Well, you know what's bad is that now it's down to two people, right? Pretty much. So you have to say Mitt or Newt, because you can't say Newt or Mitt.
Newt or Mitt.
That would be redundant, kid.
I think it's happened already.
I was going to say, I think the base has already done that.
Yeah.
It sounds like a catch, spay, and release program.
Newt Gingrich has such an incredibly inflated idea of who he is. Who could be his running mate? We're guessing he'll decide the only person who could step into his shoes if he should fail would be himself. He'll be his own vice president. And he will announce that if he were to die in office, he shall rise again after 3 days. Or maybe he will take a rib from his own body and shape a companion for Newt. Someone who will always gaze upon him worshipfully, but who will not demand expensive jewelry in return.
The only flaw in that vice presidential plan, Peter, is that about 5 years afterwards, he's going to find a better looking rib on the other side.
Straight up. Can we spare a moment of pity, though, for poor Mitt Romney? He has been trying for so long, 8 years of sucking up to the Republican base now, trying to make himself the perfect candidate, and right before the Iowa caucuses, they all break for Newt Gingrich. Romney must be like, I stayed faithful to my wife for 42 years for this. He's like, to hell with it. And he immediately started chugging Jack Daniels and moved his campaign headquarters to a brothel in Tijuana.
If he did that, he would rocket to, like, number one on
his list. He totally would.
I would love to see that.
I think he has to, like, proposition a woman on the street and get some momentum.
Really, what's going on? Is the Republican base like, I don't know, Romney, one wife. Has he been tested? Joe, you still with us?
Yes.
Good. You're very patient. I appreciate that. Here is your next quote.
They lost service with the drone. Is the Defense Department using bleeping AT&T?
That was a commenter at the New York Magazine blog, obviously upset that the Pentagon lost a drone where?
Iran.
Iran, yes, very good. When reports first came from Iran that they had shot down an American spy drone, the U.S. was like, what drone? And then Iran put the captured drone in TV, and the U.S. was like, oh, that one. The drone is used to continuously monitor high-value targets like bin Laden's compound in Pakistan, Iran's nuclear facilities, and various Kardashian weddings as they occur. The Iranians say they were able to bring the drone down through cyber attack. Well, it was either that or the U.S. made the big mistake of using Windows to run the thing. I'm sorry, but your drone has encountered a fatal error and needs to crash. So the thing starts going down, right? And the U.S. tried to initiate the drone self-destruct mechanism, but it malfunctioned, and the drone just became self-destructive. It started drinking, spending all its time at the dog track, waking up in bed with strange drones.
If they wanted someone who should self-destruct, they could have picked any of the Republican candidates to fly the drone.
Once it was captured, the drones tried to convince the Iranians it was just hiking. No, really. All right, Joe, here is your last quote.
This will give a whole new meaning to the term snail mail.
That was a writer on technorati.com talking about one failing government institution's desperate plan to stay in business. Who?
United States Post Office.
Yes, the United States Post Office. So the U.S. Postal Service is hemorrhaging money because people don't want to use it. So the government came up with a perfect solution, cut its budget so the service is even slower. Did they think people had problem with the speed of mail delivery? Was the flood of unwanted catalogs and coupon books coming through the mail slot dizzying? Better slow it down, you know. In related news, DMV offices have decided to fix their problems by filling their waiting rooms with sharks. And this is true that apparently under these new operating conditions, magazines will take up to 9 days to get to your house. So Newsweek becomes last week. Rolling Stone will now be 20 years and 1 week out of date.
You know, though, like, the Postal Service is essentially, like, a miracle. The fact that you could put, like, 45 cents worth of lickable paper on something and somebody delivers it to, like, the exact right person.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know what you're clapping for, but I find it to be unbelievable that it's even gotten this far in the first place. It's kind of amazing. That should be, like, a $20 service. Well, like, if you walked up to a dude and were like, hey, go to California and give this to this exact person, he'd be like, $500. I'm charging you for this.
Carl, how did Joe do in our quiz?
Joe had a perfect game, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Joe, you win our prize.
Yay.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much. It was great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Slow down. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri.
Yes.
The mafia, organized crime, as we know, always been deeply involved in, like, garbage, waste management. Now they're changing with the times. In New Jersey, at least, they're getting deeply involved with what?
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know they changed their...
Well, it's kind of, they're progressive. They're progressing from simple garbage to...
Recycling?
Recycling, yes.
Oh!
Turns out, that the recycling industry in New Jersey is a huge source of profit for organized crime families there. A new report from the state lays it all out. That's right, New Jersey itself is publicizing the fact that the state is deeply corrupt with murderous mob families because they'd rather be known for that than for Jersey Shore. The investigation is a decade in the making. Some residents were suspicious early on when recycling facilities asked them to separate glass, paper, and dead bodies into separate containers.
Is it really like, it'd be a shame if that can didn't go in the green container there.
Yeah. Isn't it odd to think of the mafia becoming environmentally aware? It's like, hey, I'll make him an offer he can't reuse. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. It's Bill from Savannah, Georgia.
Hey, Bill. How are things in Savannah?
Oh, good. Cold today. How's things in Kentucky?
Yeah, things in Kentucky are not too bad. Really cold. What do you do? Savannah's a beautiful city. What do you do there?
I work for the local police department.
Oh, you do? Are you a policeman then? An officer of the law? Oh, wow. Is that a tough duty in Savannah?
Lots of lost tourists.
Lots of lost tourists. Wandering around looking for gardens of good and evil. Well, it's nice to have you with us, Bill. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Bill's topic?
Move over, David Hasselhoff.
Germany has a gift for launching otherwise obscure people to national and then international fame. There's Hasselhoff, there's the 80s band Falco, and of course, Gier defend Gefilzgehuden. My panelists are going to tell you a story about a recently crowned German celebrity, but only one of them will be telling you the truth. Guess the real person, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yep, I'm ready to play.
All right, first let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
Heinrich Frieder was fooling around one morning while trimming the bushes in front of his home outside Munich. He noticed that while working on one of the smaller shrubs that it had taken on something of the shape of German Prime Minister Angela Merkel. Frieder decided to go all the way and finish his portrait in landscaping. His work proved so accurate that the local TV station did a spot on him on its news show, and soon Frieder was deluged with requests from dozens of people who wanted to create for him what soon became known as Angela Schrubben. Now Frieder is a national celebrity in Germany, where his work has gained him a nickname that translates roughly as Heinrich Scissorhands. U.S. Consul General Donald White was my first customer, Frieder said. Footballers, military men, they all want their little Angela Schrubben. But Frieder's best moment probably came a week ago when he was appearing on the morning program Guten Tag München. He was creating a large Angela Schrubben on the set when from the wings, Prime Minister Merkel herself walked out and offered to pose next to the shrub until Frieder was finished.
A man becoming well known. For doing Angela Merkel and shrubs, your next story of German fandom comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Mega fame is a strange thing, and it can fall on the mighty or the weak, as one Siegfried K. found out. The woman in the physiotherapist's office in Germany was probably quite puzzled when Siegfried stuck a toy gun in her face and demanded 10,000 euros from the bank that was, in fact, still just a physiotherapist's office. Siegfried wasn't having his best day ever. In fact, his bank-robbing plan had gone terribly, horribly wrong, as he was now sticking his non-gun at a non-teller in a non-bank and demanding money that wasn't there. After making the woman take 400 euros out of a cash machine, Siegfried stole a car, which at least was actually a car. But when he abandoned it, he left the toy gun on the seat, covered, of course, with his fingerprints, thus proving that Siegfried had never watched TV in his life.
The dumbest bank robber in Germany acquires fame. And your last story of a big German star comes from Peter Gross.
Mr. Gerhard Clay of Hanover, Germany, kept to himself and wouldn't have stood out much except for the fact that everyone in town thought he looked exactly like a cat. For years, people called him Katman because of his small eyes, his tightly drawn frown, and whiskers like mustache. Well, Herr Clay got tired of the teasing and in an act of defiance, posted a video on YouTube of himself dressed in a giant cat costume, playing with string, being confused by a laser pointer, and, most disturbingly, catching and eating a live mouse. Well, apparently there's a reason Germans have a word for taking pleasure in the misfortunes of others, because the video was a huge viral hit. So Gerhardt surrendered to his feline destiny and now hosts a live web chat at www.catman.com. He takes personal questions in real time from hundreds of thousands of dedicated fans and meows and purrs his advice in response, all while dressed as a short-haired tabby. And people are listening. So far, he has saved scores of marriages, dispensed surprisingly cogent financial guidance, and even prevented a suicide by a man who said, quote, "After explaining my problems to someone who spends all his time dressed like a cat on the internet, I realized, hey, my life's not that bad." All right.
If you were in Germany right now instead of Savannah, you probably would be talking about one of these three individuals. From Charlie, the man who's made a career for himself carving the likeness of Angela Merkel into shrubbery. From Kyrie O'Connor, the man known all over the country as Germany's dumbest bank robber ever. Or from Peter Gross, the cat man who gives advice dressed as a cat. Which of these is the real new German celebrity?
Oh, wow. I think I'm going to go with Kyrie's story.
You're going to go with Kyrie's story of the bank robber? All right. To find out the correct answer, we spoke to a journalist familiar with the real story.
The German tabloid Bild dubbed him Germany's stupidest bank robber after a man tried to rob a bank that's been closed for 17 years.
That was NPR's Germany correspondent, Eric Westerveld, describing the failed and brief career of the Germany's dumbest bank robber. You're right. Kyrie had the right story. Congratulations. You have won our game and a point for Kyrie. Well done.
Thank you very much.
And now the game where we invite on people who are simply the best at what they do. We invite them on to do something else. Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron has won every race a jockey can win, from the Kentucky Derby to, well, let's be honest, who cares about anything else? Now teaching others how to be jockeys at the North American Racing Academy here in Kentucky. Chris McCarron, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. A pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, here we are in horse country talking to a great jockey who made your career starting in California, I think, but I just found out that you actually grew up in Dorchester near Boston?
Yeah, born and raised in Dorchester, Massachusetts.
How? I've been to Dorchester. How does a Dorchester kid end up in Kentucky as a jockey?
The hard way.
Of course.
The wicked hard way.
Yeah, right.
Seriously, I mean.
I was just very blessed to be a victim of fate.
Fate. Like a horse was racing by and all of a sudden you tripped and fell onto it, and the next thing you know.
Actually, no, my older brother Greg, who's 7 years my elder, was accidentally introduced to Suffolk Downs in East Boston.
That's a racetrack.
That's correct. And I just followed him. He came home one day, got kicked in the face, his head was all exploded and everything, and I said, I want to do that.
I'm so curious, because I don't know much about horse racing, and I certainly don't know much about being a jockey. We read that you at one point actually held the record for the most races in a year. Mm-hmm. And how many races did you do in the peak of your career per year?
2,199 races I rode my first year.
You rode 2,199 races in a year?
But I got beat 1,500 times.
Right, wow. And those are the ones you remember. Wait a minute. So you go out, you race a horse, you jump off that horse, you jump on another horse, race that horse, jump off that horse.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that exhausting?
Not when you're young and fit.
Right.
For me, now it would be, yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard this, but I have heard it said that jockeys are the most fit of all athletes.
I think we're way up there.
Really?
I don't want to disrespect you,
but you're not doing the running. I can't help but notice. You're just kind of hanging on, from what I can tell. Tell me how difficult, what is involved in being a successful jockey?
Number one, balance. Mm-hmm. You have to have great physical balance. You have to have a lot of stamina.
Right.
It's not,
well, obviously.
It's not brute strength, but in order to be perched in a pair of stirrups on a very small saddle on a horse going 40 miles an hour, you have to have a tremendous amount of strength in your legs and your lower back and your arms. but it's more stamina, and it really boils down to technique.
Really? But if you're riding so many different horses in the course of a day, presumably you don't have a chance to bond with the horse like Elizabeth Taylor does in National Velvet, right? That right there is the extent of my knowledge. National Velvet.
Racing movie.
God, not even Seabiscuit.
Honestly. So, I mean, but so you're jumping on a strange horse, and you're going, okay, we're going to do this. I mean, do you have to, like, are horses different? Do you have to, like, learn what the horse responds to?
Yeah, they can be quite different, yes. There's a lot of different personalities, lots of different idiosyncrasies. And it's a matter of spending good quality 12 minutes with them before you go in the gate.
Really? Yeah. Quality time.
Quality
time.
Get
to know them?
Yeah.
How do you get to know a horse? What's like an opening conversational gambit with a horse? You really want to...
You really have to, you know, you develop a sense. You develop a feel. We rely a great deal on what the trainer has to tell us in the paddock. They'll give us some insight as to whether a horse will respond when you crack them with the crop, or if they'll sulk, or if they don't like to run inside. Some horses don't like to be back behind horses and getting all that dirt and sand kicked up in their face. They might resent that. So there are little things that the trainer... I resented it too.
Oh, sure.
I much prefer to go to the lead.
Right.
Much prefer.
How do you respond to the crack with a whip? Do you?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay. Because now I'm learning you. I feel like after we're done, I could ride you.
I hope not.
So, do horses really, are they competitive? They want to win?
Incredibly competitive.
Really?
They're bred to run. You know, their thoroughbreds are truly, truly bred to run. And they enjoy it. I firmly believe that they really love to get out there and participate in the competition. And it's a huge thrill to be sitting on one's back in a starting gate, standing still, and all of a sudden the gates fly open. And you're going 40 miles an hour in three strides. It's it's a fantastic feeling.
Right. And if the horse doesn't want to go, how do you motivate it? Did you show it the movie Seabiscuit? Okay.
If you want to eat tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it's again, it's a matter of getting to know the horse and relying on what the trainer has to say with regard to what can you do on this horse's back that's going to get the best out of him? How are you going to get that horse to best cooperate for you and with you? Sometimes it's use of the crop, and other times it's just pumping with your hands.
Just grabbing those reins and pumping with your hands.
Yep.
Are you able to translate any of the skills you learned as a jockey to your personal life?
I thought you were going to say to my students.
No. You raced some very famous horses, including a Triple Crown winner.
No, I didn't win the Triple Crown.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I appreciate the credit.
Yeah, I thought
but
you did. Yeah.
No, I won each one of the Triple Crown races twice, but I never got all three of them in one year.
In the same year, in the same horse. Right. That's what you.
I won them consecutively. But no. I won the Preakness, I mean, I won the Belmont in 86, the Derby and the Preakness in 87. So that's three in a row.
Absolutely. So, it counts as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. The horses, when they do really well, they tend to become very famous, even among non-horse racing people. But the jockey is less so. Does that ever bother you, that the horses sometimes
all the
have
time.
Really?
Yeah.
You get bitterly jealous?
I'm doing all the work up there, for crying out loud.
I know.
They're bred to run. I'm not bred to ride.
I know. It's
I had to learn how to do that.
So you're... and the oats they give you aren't as good, and you're like, oh, it's terrible.
And they get to have a lot more fun in retirement than he does.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm wondering...
Yeah, 140 mares in 4 months, five
really?
Months.
Really? Phew. Yeah, it's about to. You've retired from racing, so did they put you out to stud? Wouldn't that be?
Yeah, but the fee's very, very minimal.
I understand. Well, Chris McCarron, it is a pleasure to have you with us, but we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
On your marks, get ready, squirm.
Sure, you're a Hall of Fame jockey, but as far as we know, your career has been limited to horses. But people like to race other things. We're going to ask you three questions about different kinds of racing around the world. Get two of these questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Chris McCarron playing for?
Chris is playing for Barbara Sternberger of Lexington.
All right, ready to go? The local... Ready? How confident are you feeling?
I'm ready. Ready,
all right.
Barbara?
All right.
We're ready.
Do you have like a little metal thing you go through when you're starting a competition?
It's like that.
My God, he's whipping me. Stop. All right, never mind. The first turtle race in America happened, as far as we know, in Chicago in 1911. This race reportedly featured what? A, child jockeys sitting on top of the turtles, holding out sticks with pieces of cabbage. B, each turtle getting a flashy name like Lightning McGurk and Spirit of Rapidity. Or C, the winning turtle owner getting the loser turtles as a prize in the form of turtle soup.
Oh, boy. I hate to say it, but I think it's a soup.
You think it's a soup?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm afraid it was actually the child jockeys sitting on top
of
the turtles. Big turtles, big these land tortoises, and their kids would sit there holding the cabbage. The winner's name was lost to history, but it was the first person to crawl out of
awesome.
The circle. All right, your next question. Brisbane, Australia is the home of the annual championships in what sport? A, cockroach racing, B, slime mold racing, or C, inchworm racing?
Cricket.
Interestingly enough, that was not an option.
No. But it's a better answer.
It's a better answer. You improved it. It was fast, though. It was good. Cockroaches, slime mold, or inchworms?
Cockroaches.
Yes, it's cockroaches. Very good.
Woo!
The annual cockroach racing championship happens in Brisbane, Australia. Thousands of people come to watch. They are all drunk. All right. This is exciting. You're making a charge from the rear, as I think you might say. Coming up on the rail. Did I get that wrong? I'm sorry. So, what do I know?
It's coming
from
behind.
I'm from New Jersey. We bet on dice. All right. So here you go. You're coming along. You can win this now if you get this one right. Let's say you want to do some racing in the privacy of your own home. For very little money, very reasonable price, you can buy a kit that would allow you to competitively race what? A, head lice, B, sea monkeys, or C, your own infant children.
Sea monkeys.
Yes, sea monkeys. Yeah. Oh, sea monkey racing. Sea monkey racing game kit. Discontinued, but available online. It comes with a racetrack, pump, and, of course, little checkered flags. Carl, how did Chris McCarron do in our quiz?
Chris did very well, Peter. Two correct answers, so he wins for Barbara Sternberger.
All right.
All right, very good. Barbara.
Woo! Now, we'd like you to stand here in the winner's circle with this wreath of flowers around Carl's neck, if you don't mind. How does this victory compare to some of the others in your career?
Oh, it's the best.
Really?
Well, the last one you won is always the best.
Absolutely.
So...
I like it. Chris McCarron is a Hall of Fame jockey and director of the North American Racing Academy, part
thank
of the
you.
Jockey Community Technical College System. Chris McCarron,
thank you
so much.
I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere. And here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do. This guy says the horse can do.
Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl rides Rhyme Biscuit all the way to the Triple Crown in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, NASA may be done with shuttle missions, but that doesn't mean they're done innovating. This week, they've introduced a new piece of technology to the International Space Station at long last. What is it?
A toilet.
No, they've had that. Although, man, if they just got one of those now, it would have been an uncomfortable last few years
exactly.
for them, wouldn't it?
Well, anybody going back to Earth, I really have to go to the bathroom.
Can we pull over?
It's a new piece of technology.
It's a piece of technology that's very common here on Earth, but they've just managed to figure out a way to get one onto the space station.
Radio.
No, the only problem is they're going to have to find a pocket in their spacesuits for quarters.
A washing machine?
Yeah, a laundry machine.
Finally
have a laundry machine on the space station. It's great. Life in the International Space Station just got a lot more civilized and better smelling. Thanks to a high-tech washer dryer, astronauts will no longer be forced to wear the same pair of underwear for 3 days and then jettison them into low Earth orbit. That's what they've been doing.
That's why I can't get cell phone reception, is because there's a bunch of underwear blocking the satellite.
Well, no, actually.
Yes, they're Russian underpants.
When you think about this, you're like, what? Is it like orbiting the Earth? Is it making the Earth look like a frat house with all the dirty underwear hanging around it? No. What happens is they jettison it in a downward trajectory so that it burns up on reentry.
God, I hope so.
Yeah, that's what...
Because I'd hate to wake up and have a whole bunch of Russian underwear in my backyard somewhere.
I don't know.
In a big crater.
It burns up in reentry so that, like, that shooting star you wished on last night... you just wished to reunite with your sweetheart on some astronaut's flaming underpants.
The only drawback with this dryer thing up there now is that they're going to have to abandon the International Space Station when it becomes too filled with unmatched socks.
It'll be terrible.
And there's going to be one astronaut, the creepy astronaut, who always hangs out in the laundry room. It's like, just get out of here, man. Go read somewhere else. I know you're looking at my underwear when I leave.
Charlie, times are tough all over, including in the UK, where WHO is now facing a pay freeze.
The royal family.
Indeed. The Queen, the entire royal household. Very good. The UK is facing a major deficit, so even the Queen is being asked to cut back. She's getting a pay freeze, and UK taxpayers will no longer be footing the bill for many of her family's expenses. This explains the Craigslist ad recently seen, roommate wanted for 250-bedroom palace, no weirdos. I guess from the royal family it should be no more weirdos.
No inbreds.
Yes.
Enough already.
We assume that if this continues, the Queen will have to get a job, perhaps as a commercial pitch woman for TV comedies. We are very amused by the new 2.5 Men.
They don't get that show over there.
Well, you know, they might.
2.5 Chaps.
You know what they should do? They should follow our lead and do pledge drives. In the middle of ceremonies...
Certainly she's got plenty of tote bags.
Exactly.
She can afford to lose
a few. Little purses. She'd be like, hello, are you enjoying your monarchy? Well, to continue bringing the monarchy to you, we ask you to contribute. I could see that.
Do you enjoy my grandson dressing like a Nazi? That costume doesn't come for free, you know.
Your support goes to support our ridiculously indulgent lifestyles. Charlie, this week Eric Bolling of Fox Business News alerted viewers to the newest threat to the American way of life. What is this threat?
The anti-capitalist propaganda of the Muppets.
Indeed, yes, the Muppets. Bolling's evidence of this, the new Muppet movie with evil oil baron Tex Richmond. Richmond in the movie wants to tear down the Muppets theater to drill for oil. But as Bolling pointed out, did this or the other Muppet movies ever say one word about the benefits of carbon-based fuels? He says, quote, none of the movies remind people what oil means for most people, which is fuel to light a hospital or heat your home or maybe fuel an ambulance to get you to a hospital if you need that, unquote. Geez, what must it be like to watch movies with Eric Bolling? He's like, gosh, think how many jobs Darth Vader created building that Death Star. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. And you can check out our podcast, How to Do Everything This Week, How Not to Get a Lunch Date with Matt Damon. In case you were worried that might happen. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, everyone. My name is Don George, and I'm from Falls Church, Virginia.
Hey, how are things in Falls Church?
Pretty good. The weather started to get a little bit cold now, so we now seem to have moved from fall straight into winter.
I see. That's always frustrating. There's no transition. What do you do there?
I work for an internet services company, helping our clients take their environments from their physical data centers up to the cloud and do a lot of data center virtualization.
Wow.
I know.
Well, welcome to the show, Don. Carl Castle right now is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you could fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you will be our winner. Ready to play?
I am.
Here's your first limerick.
The museum director will whine no more. The skull's on the shelf in room 904. The discovery's big, and there's no need to dig. We found a new species of...
Spore?
Spore? It's a little slightly more complicated than that, but you're on the right track. Let's hear it again.
The museum director will whine no more. The skull's on the shelf in room 904. The discovery's big, and there's no need to dig. We found a new species of...
Dinosaur.
Yes, dinosaur. Very good. Scientists at Britain's Natural History Museum have discovered a new dinosaur species right in their own basement. Turns out a pile of bones that have been sitting there for more than a century belonged to a previously unknown type of dinosaur, now known as the Spinops sternbergordum. It was one of many species of basement dinosaurs who often ended up in basements in search of their primary food source, 30-year-old men who still live with their parents. Here's your next limerick.
What I'm like is real easy to tell. The term aura describes it quite well. You can tell by your nose that the bloom's off my rose. My traits are discerned by their...
smell?
Right! Indeed! The way you act determines the way you smell. Everybody in America just went, uh-oh. This is from a study in the Journal of Personality. It is called that because it's not very good looking. Oh, the journal, it has personality. Scientists had subjects wear shirts for three consecutive days, and then they had other people make character judgments on the wearer of those shirts based strictly on the smell. The results were a pretty good match to what they knew about the people beforehand. Nice people, though, do not necessarily make nice smells, though, which is why you might find yourself saying, whoa, what happened? Did somebody kindness in here?
I bet if I smelled one of those shirts, I'd be like, I don't know what this person's like, but I know that they wore this shirt for 3 days.
That's exactly. All right, here is your last limerick.
At Starbucks, we try to refine what you sip on your break after 9. The Venti Merlot is for here or to go. Our coffee shop soon will serve...
wine.
Yes, indeed. Starbucks has announced that it will start serving beer and wine in some shops next year, in addition to their usual $17 cups of coffee. This is great. Thanks to their shame-free to-go cups, you'll be able to have beer lattes at your desk all day. PBR lattes with extra foam will be great. There's one problem, though. Frappuccinos, macchiatos, very hard to pronounce when you're drunk.
And those people that sit at the table journaling for 6 hours will now sit at the table journaling for 12 hours.
Exactly. Coffee, 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 beer, 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 beer. Carl, how did Don do in our quiz?
Don, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done, Don. Excellent. Congratulations.
Excellent.
Thanks for playing.
No, thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Kerry O'Connor and Charlie Pierce both have 3 points. Peter Gross has 2.
All right. Peter, you are in third place, so you will start first. The clock will start when you begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Testifying before a House committee Thursday, former MF Global CEO John Corzine said he didn't know where the company's client's missing blank is.
Money.
Yes. On Wednesday, an Illinois judge sentenced former governor blank to 14 years in prison.
Rod Blagojevich.
Yes. A federal judge ruled this week that a Montana blogger sued for defamation was not protected by the Shield Law because she is not a blank.
Not protected by the Shield Law because
she
is not
a...
Shield.
No, because she is not... A journalist.
Journalist.
8 years after landing, a rover has found what NASA calls bulletproof evidence. There once was water on blank.
Mars.
Yes. A man in Chicago made the mistake this week of attempting to mug a blank.
Homeless person.
No, a mixed martial arts fighter.
Oh. Oh.
Actor Harry Morgan, best known for his role as Colonel Potter in the TV show Blank, died at age 96 this week.
MASH.
Yes. The stars of the show MythBusters apologized this week after an experiment went wrong and they accidentally blanked.
They proved a myth. True.
No. No, they shot a cannonball through a house. Whoops.
What was the myth that you couldn't?
Yeah, apparently. A Maryland man was arrested for shoplifting at a Walmart during their promotion called Blank.
Like free stuff day?
No, the promotion was Shop with a Cop Day. Probably the worst shopping day to stuff video games down your pants is Shop with a Cop Day. The only day that could possibly worse to do that would be All the Video Games Are Covered in Crabs Day. Carl, how did Peter do in our quiz?
Well, Peter had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 10 points, and Peter Gross has taken the lead.
Well done, Peter. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You know there's more, though, right?
We flipped a coin. Charlie's elected to go last. So, Kiri, you are up next.
Okay.
Fill in the blank. This week, BP said that after the Gulf oil spill, subcontractor blank intentionally destroyed evidence.
Halliburton.
Right. In a speech Thursday, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie called presidential candidate blank the only Republican who can win.
Romney.
Right. On Thursday, the Senate rejected rival Republican and Democratic plans for extending the blank for another year.
The tax cut.
The payroll tax
payroll
cut,
tax
yes.
cut.
And what could be signs of another civil war brewing, Michigan and Wisconsin are battling over blank.
Which one looks more like a mitten?
Exactly right. The Beastie Boys, Guns N' Roses, and Donovan were among the musicians selected for induction into the blank.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, brick-and-mortar retail stores were enraged by Blank's plan to offer discounts to customers who scanned prices in stores and then bought online.
Amazon.
Right. Florida police believe a man who blanked was planning a romantic dinner.
A man who put candles and wine out in the park.
No, a man who put candles and steak down his pants and tried to walk out of a
supermarket. Oh, I know.
When you think of a romantic meal, you probably think candlelit dinner for two. In your pants. That's exactly what grocery store employees found when they caught this guy. Apparently, he was celebrating an important anniversary with his zipper.
You're just going to wind up in there anyway, honey. I put the whole meal down there. Right?
It's romantic.
I'm sensing a theme on the last questions.
Yes. Carl. How did Kiri do on our quiz?
Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points.
All right.
Kiri has taken the lead.
All right. So how many, then, does Charlie Pierce need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, here we go. You ready to go, Charlie?
Oh, no, but go ahead anyway.
All right. Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. World War II veterans across the country came together on Wednesday to mark the 70th anniversary of the attack on blank.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was blamed for the protests over Russia's recent elections by blank on Thursday.
Vladimir Putin.
Right. Arrested on drunk driving charges over the weekend. On Tuesday, the head of the blank resigned.
Oh, the FAA.
Yes, indeed. On Thursday, Attorney General Eric Holder said he would not resign over the botched gun smuggling sting known as Operation Blank.
Fast and furious.
Yes. A British man managed to get his 1967 Chevy to go 300 miles per hour just by customizing it with a blank.
Rocket engine.
Yes, strapped to the roof from a cruise missile. On Thursday, 3-time National League MVP Albert Pujols agreed to a 10-year deal with the blanks.
The California Angels.
Indeed. Because he refused to stop playing a game on his phone after blank was thrown off an American Airlines flight this week. Yes, indeed. After he was fired from a Chinese technology company, a man's plan to exact revenge by pulling off a big heist was foiled when he blanked.
Put his company down his pants.
No. That'll show you, he said. No, when he got stuck dangling from a ventilation shaft, the man known as Mr. Chi wanted revenge to make sure his former employees never forgot him. But his perfect revenge heist went wrong because of one thing the size of his belly.
Oh, no.
Even his backup plan, taking his pants off, there they are, to make himself fit better, failed. So instead of being remembered as a criminal mastermind, Mr. Chi will forever be remembered by his coworkers as that chubby guy without any pants dangling from the ceiling. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needed 7 correct answers, Peter, to win. He had 7 correct answers.
Well done.
With 17 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Well done. Thank you. Sound like a champion thoroughbred. And now we put you out to stud.
Oh, boy.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what Iran will do with our drone. But first, let me tell you that our big year-in-review TV special will air Friday night, December 23rd, on BBC America. It's Wait, Wait on TV, all the catfighting of a reality show with none of the actually attractive people. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available at 1-800-HARDWOOD. Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, which monitors mileage and safe driving habits to determine a personalized rate. Learn more at progressive.com. And Pimsleur Language Programs, offering tools to record an answering machine greeting in 45 languages. Learn more at pimsleur.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Mohammed Mao. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will Iran do with that drone? Peter Gross.
Well, they claim they're going to try to make it run again, but it's just going to end up sitting on blocks in their driveway.
You know how it goes. Kerry O'Connor.
Oh, no. They're going to install it in front of the Isfahan VFW.
And Charlie Pierce.
It's being mailed to Iowa because that's where all the failed, misguided, and broken-down drones are hanging around for the next month.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Kerry O'Connor, Peter Gross, Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Roger Duvall at WEKU and the staff of the EKU Center for the Arts and our fabulous audience here. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.